Welcome, everybody. This is Perry Marshall. We've got about 30 more seconds before we're going to get going here, but welcome to the first ever Perry Marshall Late Night Pajama Jam for Night Owls. We're going to have a good time here tonight. We're here with John Carlton. And we got people from all over the world. I mean, we got Namibia and
South Africa, Perry.
I'm sorry?
What time is it in South Africa?
It is, if I'm not mistaken, it's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Huh. That's impressive.
Either 5 or 6. I had people from Germany, the people from the UK. They were, the people in the UK were complaining the loudest because it's 5 over there. But, but yeah, it's great. Well, it's 11:59 Eastern Time. We're going to get started right on time. A couple business items out of the way. Get out of the way. A lot of people asked if they can get an MP3 of this. Only people who are on this call are going to get the MP3 before October. At the end of this call, I'm going to give instructions on how to get that. We'll cover that at the very end of the call. But meanwhile, I'm here with John Carlton. John was unknown to most of the world before 2 years ago, and he came out of hiding. He's kind of a reclusive guy. The only people that really knew who he was were the top direct marketers and the top mail order guys in the country and some of the best direct marketers in the world. They all knew who John was. None of the rest of us did. 2 years ago, he decided that he was going to throw his hat in the ring and start teaching direct marketing, and that coincided with approximately the same time that I came out and started a consulting business and left the Dilbert Cube. And discovering John was a very important move for me. He's been very influential in my maturing as a marketer. I will talk about that later, but having access to John has been very, very instrumental in helping me get things off the ground. John has the complete respect of all of the most highly regarded people in the direct marketing industry. You can see on the web pages and stuff that we're going to put up here, he's written copy for people like Jay Abraham and Gary Halbert. Dan Kennedy says he's one of the few copywriters that he'd actually pay money to sit and listen to in a seminar. And so, John, I just want you to say hi to everybody and tell us how you found your way into the strange, wonky world of salesmanship in print.
Yeah, hi, Perry, and hello to everybody out there. Quite a myriad little universe you've got going there of people. I'd like to just get going. I know we only got about an hour, and there's a lot I want to cover. So most people do want to know how I got into this, and I got into this largely because I didn't have anywhere else to go. I'm the kind of guy who kept getting spit out of the corporate world. I don't like wearing ties. I have a problem with authority, and really, I just didn't fit anywhere. You talk about the Dilbert Cube. I mean, I was even worse than that. I was always, I wasn't actively trying to sabotage the businesses I was in, but I was always thinking of ways to make work there fun rather than profitable. So anyway, right about the time I hit 30, I realized my life was going nowhere, and I was kind of tired of working really hard to make somebody else rich. So I went out on my own. In my little arsenal of how to take on the world as a freelance copywriter, I had John Caple's book called Tested Advertising Methods, a dog-eared copy of that, which I'd stolen from another copywriter, the first copywriter I'd ever met, who refused to help me, so I stole her copy of And I had one tank full of gas in my rattle-trap Toyota, and I had the rent covered for one more month in my little 1920s era wooden dilapidated beach cottage in Hermosa Beach. And I had a manual typewriter with a sticky F key that I had to keep, you know, pulling back. And that was it. I mean, I didn't have anything else. I had no contacts. I had no I had no safety net. I had no plan B if my going out as a freelance advertising copywriter. And I'd only done a little bit of copywriting at that time. I was mostly coming from the art side. I was a commercial artist, a graphic artist, but not a very good one. I was colorblind, for example. I got some jobs at some black and white magazines, and once they all went to color, I knew my time was short at that point. So when I went out, with the feeling I got, and this is very important. It's a story I tell a lot, but it's very important because the feeling I had when I went out on my own like that was that I had a gun to my head. And because, again, I had no safety net, I had no plan B. Now, when I tell people that, the first thought they have is that when you have a gun to your head, you start to panic a little bit. But the exact opposite actually happened to me. I really calmed down because I knew there was nothing for me to do but do the best I could. By bringing in some work and doing the best I could in this. Now, I knew from the little bit of reading I'd done and from the little bit of research I'd done that direct response advertising was the best way to sell. This is the kind of advertising that goes back actually to the dawn of time when the first caveman offered a haunch of mastodon beef to the caveman next to him to trade caves so he'd have a better view. I mean, it's all about salesmanship. It's all about putting salesmanship into print so that you can reach a large number of people rather than the average really good street salesman can only reach one person at a time and talk to them, or maybe a few or however many people that, within the reach of his voice at most. But when you learn how to translate that salesmanship into the printed word, suddenly you can literally mail a letter or send an email to every single person on the planet who has a mailbox and who has access to the World Wide Web. And that, of course, multiplies your options, it multiplies your customer base, everything. So this feeling of having a gun to my head, of having no other options, of only being able to move forward, really did calm me down because I knew I wasn't going to do a couple things. I wasn't going to screw around. I wasn't going to try to be creative with what I wrote. I wasn't going to try new things. I was going to stick to proven direct response principles, which I had learned through Claude Hopkins' book and John Cable's book and a few others. I actually took a speed reading course just before I went out on my own and went and read everything in the Dewey Decimal System in the library from 600 to 750, I think, which includes sales, copywriting, advertising, et cetera.
Oh, my.
Well, it wasn't quite as impressive as you think. There aren't that many good books out there. And one speed reading is once you realize you're in a dog book, you toss it. So you go to the next one, go to the next one. And I came out with about 10 books. It kind of helped me a little bit. Anyway, it turns out that having the gun to your head idea that you're not going to fool around, you're not going to take risks with what you're doing. You're going to stick to proven salesmanship and use the tactics that have been working since the dawn of time. It turns out that's the best advertising there is. So by not going out there doing what 99% of all other advertisers or copywriters or everybody else out there does, which is exactly that, screw around, try to be creative, be ticked off that you have to do advertising when you really want to be painting like, Monet over in Paris, And I realized that that just put me so far ahead of everybody else. And I was down in Los Angeles at the time, and they used to sneak me in the back door. They would sneak me in the back door to do the jobs, their own, the advertising agencies would sneak me in to do the jobs their own creative writers couldn't do because they weren't dedicated copywriters. They just wanted to be a writer, and this was a way to pay the rent until they were discovered as the next Hemingway. And they didn't use really good salesmanship in print. So that just got me a really good toehold. Through that, I met Jay Abraham, and through Jay Abraham at his divorce party, I met Gary Halbert. I don't know how hip your people are to Gary Halbert, and I'm assuming that you've done your job and made these people least aware of direct response copywriting and things like that.
Well, I probably half of these people are from my Google course, which is like, Google AdWords is okay. Direct marketing on steroids.
Yes,
but
exactly.
But certainly, yeah, sure.
I'll just go ahead and cover it as we go along. If you have any questions, I'll get going, but I want to cover these grand promises you made.
Yes.
And also, Perry, is everybody online so they can go to those examples when we get to them?
Well, that's the plan, and I'll tell everybody right now where it is. If you go to perrymarshall.com/ John Letters, JohnLetters, one word, perrymarshall.com/John Letters. A page will come up, and we've got examples that John has posted for us. And I will add that John does not distribute this kind of stuff freely. He did this for our teleseminar. It's going to get taken down later. So thank you, John. And he's gonna go into some very specific examples here.
Right, and I'll probably get to those in just a bit. And again, here we are already 8 minutes in or 9 minutes in this call, and we haven't even started on the juicy stuff yet. Anyway, the you had mentioned three things before getting to these three ads. You talked about, I was going to talk about hooks, salesmanship, Operation Money Suck, and how to take any venture from zero to fabulous success as quickly as humanly possible, and also the lazy man's three-step shortcut. So I'd like you to just kind of plow into that. And after I get to the lazy man's lazy businessman's three-step shortcut, it will naturally segue into these three ads, and then we can go on to that.
Okay.
If you want to interrupt me at any time while we're going along, just jump right in. But I'll just kind of start on this.
Right on.
First of all, I think the term Operation Money Suck always gets a smile from people, but it is the most deadly serious thing for any businessman to learn. The earlier you learn it, the better off you're going to be. The more you take it to heart, the more profitable your business is going to be. Very simply, Operation Money Suck. I'll tell you the quick story of how this happened. I was sitting in an office with Gary Halbert. We were supposed to go over a bunch of ads that we were going to write, a lot of business. We were going to call some clients, and we had, like, set aside a couple of hours. Just as we sat down, his secretaries came in, and they said, oh, my God, the landlord's on the phone. He's really pissed off about something. The copier just broke. The computer went down. They went on with a litany of, like, 15 fires that were going on, essentially. And I thought to myself, well, that's it. We're not going to get down to any business here because we've got to, stop and take care of all these little emergencies. But Halbert really surprised me. He said, calm down. He backed them out of the room, closed the door, and locked it without another word of exclamation, came down and said, let's get busy. And we worked for the next 3 hours and got a lot of business done and brought in a lot of money. When we opened the door later, we found that a lot of the problems had solved themselves, and the ones that hadn't weren't that important anyway. So right about then, it really got nailed into my head what Operation Money Suck was about. If you are the person in your business who brings in the money, then that is your number one job, bring in the money. That is your number two job, bring in the money. Your number three, your number four, on down the line. You are not making money when you are fixing the copier. You are not making money when you're on the phone to people who want a refund. You are not making money when you're dealing with anything else other than the things that you do to bring in the money. In most businesses, and especially in the direct marketing businesses, Perry Marshall is a great example. No one else in his business can do what he does. When he sits down and says, I'm going to spend 8 hours crafting new websites, writing new copy, creating a new product, all of that stuff is a step towards putting something out there that's going to bring in money. That's Operation Money Suck. If Perry doesn't do it, nobody else is going to do it. So the one thing to really drive through your head is Operation Money Suck is sitting down and getting down to business. It seems obvious once you understand it, but believe me, I've been in this business for over 20 years. It is not obvious to the average businessman, and it's the reason most businesses go under. People that open restaurants spend all their time worrying about the sign or the menu or even the product, for example, how good the pasta tastes, when really they should be worrying about the marketing, bringing people into the restaurant.
Well, a lot of people are conditioned, school and whatever, to be reactive and to wait for things to come up for them to deal with, and business does not work that way. You have to be proactive. Marketing is a proactive thing. So, yeah.
Right. You got to take control, and you got to be out there. Nobody's going to do it for you. Nobody's going – the overall lesson that I've been involved, I've co-produced, I've spoken at, and I've held something like 40 or 50 different seminars on marketing. And in all of these seminars, we have something called the hot seat where we'll bring somebody up and we'll discuss their problem I just meet a lot of people who tell me about their business, tell me about their marketing problems. And almost all of it boils down to you're not paying attention to the bottom line. People come up to me and say, I'm trying to reach a certain crowd of people, to buy my product, but I don't understand them. Well, what can I do about that? That's your job then. Understand them. Get down into the dirt with them if you have to. You need to understand your market better than they understand themselves, really. So let's move to the next one. You talked about taking any venture from zero to fabulous success really fast. That is part of what I was talking about when I talked about the gun to the head theory of marketing. There are, let's see, I've written down three ways, I believe, that I'd like to break this down. My notes are pretty scattered here. But number one, to take any venture from zero to success fast, you got to do smart marketing. Now, when I say smart marketing, this is going to be something that, again, most people don't do. You want to spend 100 times more time on your marketing than you do on creating or finishing up the product. Now, this kind of shocks a lot of people, and a lot of people do this ass backwards. They get this great product, and they think if they get the great product together and they pour all their money into this, then the world will beat a path to the door, and they're just astonished when it doesn't happen. The marketing graveyard is littered with fabulous products. The most famous one, I think, that I've used as an example is Betamax, opposed to VHS, you know, video. Betamax, Sony Betamax, was a much better product, 15 times better than video, I understand. Yet because they marketed it so poorly, they lost out. Now you can't even find Betamax out there. It's all VHS. So you want to spend all your time learning about marketing, finding out about the market, and finding ways. You should be writing your ad and getting your ad set and your marketing campaign all set up before you finish your product. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not ethical to try to sell a product that doesn't exist, but the truth is that great marketing will sell a non-existent product. But even the most fabulous market on the face of the earth won't sell a single unit with rotten advertising. So the way I tell people to do it, if they're just starting out or if they're getting the thing together, get your product into a state where you can ethically fulfill on the promises you make in your advertising. In other words, it doesn't have to have a lot of bells and whistles. It doesn't have to be really fancy. It can be something we call guerrilla-style presentations. Perry, you probably told them about, you know, Dan Kennedy's, you know, slapping together stuff and Xeroxing it and putting it out there, just so you can fulfill on the promises you've made in the advertising. Once you've done that, then you need to spend all your time on the marketing, finding the right market, finding the hook that's going to get you into the, you know, into the subconscious of that market and get them to and deliver a message that gets them so excited they can't sleep until they order, and then find out how to take those orders and how to make the money come in. All of that has to start taking place. And then if and when your product shows that it has legs and it's a winner, then you can go back and spruce it up, make it really fancy if you want.
Well, I really have to agree with this because, you know, I've spent a lot of time in the high-tech world, and a lot of times companies will spend millions of dollars getting a product together and polished up and everything before they've truly established any demand for it at all. I mean, I get a chapter in my Google book where you know, instead of developing a product, we'll just have people, you know, write some kind of a white paper or some kind of a guide that would help somebody begin to solve a problem, and then advertise that and see if you can even get people to come to your site and ask for it. And if you couldn't even do that, then why would you go spend $1 million developing software or something, you know, complicated?
Perry, I like to bring everything down to romance because everybody understands romance. So this is kind of like being at home, not asking anybody else their opinion, and dressing yourself as wildly as you want to, and pretending that that is somehow going to wow all your target audience. You know, if you're a guy, all the chicks are going to go wild in the bar, and you walk out with, you know, a yellow clown suit because you need a clown suit. You know, just the most basic marketing of all is find out what other people know about this stuff. Your best friend will tell you, no. You know, at least take the rubber nose off, you know, that kind of thing. So, but it really is that silly. It's like a lot of guys come to me with ideas for products, and I just tell them, you know, no. And you know, the most embarrassing one is people spend a year and a lot of their money, their hard-earned money, on a product. And I tell them, guess what? Reader's Digest gives this away for free. You have just created a product that has been covered over three times in the last year by Reader's Digest, you know, like some health cure or something, you know. I had one guy at one seminar come. He wanted to get, he says, I have put in the application for the patent on lapel American flag pins. I'm going to get the patent, and I'm going to get people to buy them for $25, and it only cost me a nickel to make. He had this all figured out, except for the fact that, first, you're not going to get the patent, and second, these are given away free by, you know, veterans of foreign wars and all this stuff. It just, it really was that stunning, but that's an outrageous example, but it's not an uncommon example.
No, it's not.
So let's go to the next part. So first, you do smart marketing. Number two, the mistake most people make when they do marketing is they think they're going to educate people about why they need what they're going to sell. A lot of people want to sell something. Well, that's fine if you're really excited about something, and we talk about passion in advertising and things like that. But just because you like it, just because you're excited about it, doesn't mean anybody else is. The key to success in marketing is to find a parade that's already in session and go stand in front of it. Go find the beaten paths and get onto there. Don't try to convince people they should buy your widget. Just it may be the best widget out there, but remember that pioneers are the guys laying at the side of the road with arrows in their back. Okay? You want to find the paths that have already been down there. Do a better version of a product that's already selling really well. I mean, you know, they talk about Microsoft being number one, you know, just being so much bigger than even number two. But guess what? Number two, even in that crowded market, is doing rather well.
Yes.
So that's something to think about. If you have to educate your market on what you have, you're not only looking at an uphill battle to sell anything, you're looking at a solid wall. And you're not going to be able to climb it. Don't even try. If you have something that you want to educate people on, just write a book. Write a nonfiction book and put it out there and sell it through Amazon and do something like that and become the new guru of some, you know, of widgets that people have never heard of before. Don't try to sell it as a product in a market.
Agreed.
That's on that? Just agreed. Okay, now number three ties in with the smart marketing thing. If you want to take any venture from zero to success fast, just, again, with the gun to the head thing, use direct response advertising. And Perry, you talk about using it on steroids, you know, for the Google campaign. People actually didn't understand that direct response principles would work for the web, a lot of younger guys. You were one of the first to actually realize that, of course, it would work. I am so old now, I'm 50, that I remember when infomercials were kind of new, and I actually wrote some of the early infomercials, and people, and of course, you could buy time for free on cable from midnight until 6 a.m. for free. They just give it to you. They thought this is worthless time. You want an hour? Fine, you got an hour. Just, you know, because they wanted content. So, we would literally go into the studio. We'd get studio time for like $50 because we'd go to a local PBS station that had nothing going on, and we'd hire a couple students. We'd get a guy with a product, slap him into a Johnny Carson type setup where he's sitting there being interviewed by a guy, Jay Leno, for you guys that are a lot younger. And just interviewing with no prep, no writing, no nothing. I mean, I would write up the questions and stuff. And then we'd slap it up, that film. We'd start filming at minute one. We'd finish when we hit minute 60, try to throw a pitch in there, and put it up. And if it worked, we'd keep running until it didn't work. And it took almost 2 years for the major advertising agencies to start catching on that people really were responding to this stuff. And what was it? It was just the same as long copy direct response writing. It was just, you know, long copy advertising on TV. It's the same in radio. It's the same in print. It's the same on the web. It's the same everywhere. Direct response advertising really works. And direct response advertising, use as long copy as long as you can, because not because long copy works, but because you want to start explaining what you have, tell your story, and offer proof, credibility, a reason to buy. You want to counter all the objections, and that takes a little time. That takes a little bit of time. Trying to write a great ad and giving yourself a limit, like one page or two pages or something like that, is like telling your salesman to go out, knock on a door, and say, "I've got a wonderful product for you," and tell him he can only say 50 words, and then he has to shut up. No matter what the customer asks, no matter how far the sales pitch has gone, no matter how close he is to a sale, asking him to shut up at that point. That's not good marketing. Now, of course, in Google, you are limited in some way, so you have to really pack that stuff down. I think that's why you call it on steroids. But you do want to get them to a site where there is long copy there, where you can do all the proof, the credibility. And finally, the most important thing is ask for action.
Well, this TV thing really ties in, because really what you did was you took a sales presentation that worked in person. You replicated it on TV in an interview format.
Right.
Okay. And what you're saying, and I think this is one of the things that we're going to talk about in a little more detail, is you're taking that same concept and now you're moving it to paper or you're moving it to a website, and it almost perfectly mimics what you would have done on TV or what already happens in person.
Exactly. And in fact, that's an excellent segue to the lazy businessman's three-step shortcut to your first fabulous money-pulling ad. For somebody who insists that they can't write, who insists that they don't understand the whole concept of direct response advertising, that they don't understand how to get all this done, here's a very, very three-step simple way to get this done. First of all, if you have something to sell and you have ever sold it to anybody, especially face-to-face. Let's say you're in a business where you are selling stuff face-to-face, or you've just gotten somebody excited about it, sitting in a bar talking about it or anything. If you've actually sold it at all, well, first of all, if you haven't sold it at all face-to-face and you're going out there to try to sell in print and you're a complete rookie at this, you're gonna have some problems. So you may want to go out and try selling it face-to-face to people. Get their reactions. Find out what gets them excited. Find out when their eyebrows go up. Find out, especially when their eyes roll back in their head because you're boring them to death, and then ask for the sale and find out what you have to do to make them buy. And what that encompasses is countering all the objections. And the person says, that's too much, and then you have an answer for that. Well, it pays for itself in less than 3 weeks. Oh, well, I don't have the money right now. You don't need the money right now. You can buy it on credit. You can buy it in 3 payment plans. I have to go ask my wife. Well, why don't you try it for free and let her see for herself how she, just all this countering stuff that happens with a good salesman. So if you're in business, either do it yourself or find the best guy in your organization who knows how to deliver a great sales pitch face-to-face. And then what you do is you record him at fever pitch giving this pitch to somebody. Now, if you're in a business where you are selling this actively, say on the phone, say you're calling people or you're meeting with people and you're selling or you're doing something, record the successful times that you have sold this. It may take you 30 times to do this to get it right, but it doesn't much matter. Find the best one that you have, the best recording, then simply transcribe it. What you've got there is the elements of a great advertisement. Because what you do is whenever the other person talks, turn them into questions. So if the guy says, I can't afford it, so in your ad you would say, is this too expensive for you to afford right now? And the guy says, whatever the objection, the guy brings it up, just turn it into a question and then answer it and write down what you've answered. Once you have this transcribed, you can start maneuvering this around and actually kind of tidying it up a bit, take out all the ums and ahs and all that kind of nonsense. And once you've got it arranged into hi, my name is Joe Smith. I've got widgets for sale, and I understand you're in the market for widgets. Here's what these widgets can do for you. Here's how much they cost, blah, blah, blah. You go off on your sales pitch. Once you've smoothed it out, you can just put it down on paper, and guess what? You can mail it out or post it, and you've got the essence, and not just the essence, you've got the broad stroke wonderfulness of your sales pitch written down on paper or printed on the computer screen.
Well, most people kind of have this disconnect where they can talk about something easier than they can write about it. Now, I think you're sort of implying here, it's worth mentioning, that if there's no such thing as a situation where you ever actually sat down with a real person and tried to sell them your idea, that might be an indication that the idea isn't ready.
Right.
But really, that transcription can be the whole core of that sales letter or the website or whatever.
We can even work it the other way. I of course don't do that anymore. Everything, all these tactics are so deep ingrained in my system that I just, I start at the top of a letter and I write all the way through. I don't recommend other people do that, but I've been doing this for 20 years. if you take some of my letters, you can actually reverse it. And you could take one of my letters that I wrote, not show it to a good salesman in that same business, listen to him talk, and you would be astonished at the correlation between what I wrote and what he decided to tell a person face-to-face.
I totally agree. When you start studying, when you start listening and paying attention to really good sales presentations, when you start reading good sales letters, there's this conversational rhythm that they all have, always.
And that's a really good point, Ben. You know what that is, don't you?
I'm not sure where you're going.
That's the age-old human-to-human storytelling DNA at work. Humans have always told stories. And some of the best advertising out there tells a story. And it doesn't have to be one night I woke up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat and I realized I had the cure for cancer. You know, it doesn't have to be that kind of a story. But as you go through your pitch, whether it's online, whether it's in the mail, whether it's on radio or on TV or whatever, as you go through that, you are crafting a tale. You are painting a pleasing picture inside your prospect's head. That pleasing picture must tap into the core of what he wants. Maybe it's just his greed gland. Maybe you show him a way he can get rich very quickly. Maybe you show him how he can get the house of his dreams or the spouse of his dreams or just change his life or just have a better motor oil, you know, or not have to change motor oil anymore and save money, things like that. You're crafting a sales story. And the more successful you are at crafting a story, and this is something I try to get most of the people that I teach how to write copy to do. I tell them, you know, I ask them at a seminar, I say, this morning you woke up at, say, 6 o'clock, and between 6 o'clock and getting here at the seminar at 8:15, what happened to you? Tell me a story. Most of them can't do it. But after I get them to work at it a little bit, they'll say, well, yeah, there was this kind of interesting guy in the elevator. I was kind of, you know, frightened. You know, he was a biker or something. And they start realizing that even in the most mundane presentation of things in their lives, there is a story to tell. Now, the best people at this tell stories. I come from a long line of storytelling bullshit artists, essentially, in my family. And, you know, I grew up with uncles that would just, you didn't want to leave the table. They'd light up a cigar after dinner and push back and just start off on the tail. And my cousins and I picked up on the same thing. And to this day, we can just go off. Now, sometimes they're boring. If you're not interested, they're boring. But guess what? That's direct response advertising. You want to collect the hot names of people who are interested in what you're selling and then periodically sell things to them. How do you do that? You tell them a story that hits their emotional sweet spot, their passionate core. In other words, if take bowlers. If you're going after bowlers, they will read 25 pages of copy on bowling if that's their passion because they're interested. It may bore you to tears, and if that's true, you probably shouldn't be in that market. But the point is, what bores one guy is, you know, what's poison to one guy is meat and potatoes to the next guy.
So when you say how proven world-class copywriters really use hooks and killer salesmanship, this is the essence of what you're talking about right now.
Exactly. When I talk about a hook, I have an ad, an early ad that I wrote called the how does that headline go with a three-legged golfer? It's the amazing secrets discovered by a one-legged golfer that allows normal golfers to hit drives 100 yards further or something. I forget the exact title. But the point was the unusual juxtaposition of this just started a story right there in the headline. First of all, the whole idea of a one-legged golfer just sets your mind abuzz. And, of course, this was all true. I had to dig for this, and that's a whole other story. I don't think I should get into that right now. But the short part of it is what separates the good writers from the bad writers is the hook in your story. And the hook is, how do I find a way literally to hook people who I want to come into the story or to the sales pitch? Now, how do I find a way to hook them and bring them in, much like you're fishing? Now, guess what? I don't care if I offend, bore, or lose people who aren't going to buy. I don't care about that. I don't care if people say, I'm not interested in this. Why are you telling me this? You know, well, I'm not after anybody who doesn't golf with a story like that. And I'm not after anybody who is so good that they don't need to add 100 yards to their drive. And I'm not after anybody who is so you know, so country clubbish that they would never, you know, deign to buy a videotape instructional thing. You know, they're going to hire the club pro. I'm not worried about those guys. We call that going after the foxes and forgetting about the dogs.
Mm.
So what you want to do is focus on the guy or the woman who's going to buy your product and get inside of their head and go after them. And that hook becomes easier to find when you're doing that. When you're there's a large number of golfers, for example, out there. I've written a lot of golf ads for a certain client. And there's a lot of golfers out there. About 90% of them can't break 90 on an easy course. Yet if you read the golf magazines or watch the Golf Channel stuff, you get the idea that most golfers are kind of athletic and agile and have the game down and are able to spend 20 hours a week on the range practicing, and they buy the best equipment. Not true. A lot, you know, half the people out there are there with clubs their father left them in the will, and they can't practice. They lose balls. They play with bad. You know, they, if they don't find a ball in the ninth green, they're not going to be able to play the tenth green. And these people are very open to the idea that quickly, overnight, with just a single lesson, they can suddenly become 100 times better than they are now and start golfing really well. They are very receptive to that stuff. There's a lot of them out there.
So you're dealing with the hard reality that most of these guys are mediocre. They are overweight. They have old clubs.
They're out of shape. They're arthritis problems.
And they have a fantasy.
Exactly.
About the magic trick that gives them the sensational day on the course.
That's, you know, I couldn't have put it better myself, and I'm going to steal that.
Okay.
Yes, you want to tap into that fantasy. Now, sometimes they don't even know the fantasy is there. I wrote the first ad in golf that kind of shocked everybody. It was a 3-page ad. And this one in Golf Magazine, in Golf Digest, all the biggies. These are very staid, conservative publications. And suddenly this thing about a three-legged golfer with 3 pages of solid copy, no photos, no nothing, just three columns to each page, solid copy, about 11-point type. It was dense. These guys had never seen this stuff before, and I just whacked them over the head with everything I had. And the thing went nuts for about 8 years. And now, of course, a lot of other golf, the whole Golf Channel. I mean, I don't know if you've watched the Golf Channel, but they've just ripped off my ads directly and then put it on infomercials.
Let me back up a step, because people could miss this. You wrote a 3-page ad, ugly as sin. Right?
Yeah.
You stuck it in the middle of some, you know, pompous sort of...
four-color, yeah.
Corporate magazine.
Right.
It ran for how long?
Well, anywhere from 2 to 3 or 4 insertions a year for about 4 years. And then it ran once or twice a year for the next couple of years. And each time it ran, it would do very, very well. And of course, that's an advanced tactic, but you pay attention to how well the ad runs. If it runs, with the first time it ran, it pulled something like, I'm guessing now, but it was like 20 to 1. So for every dollar the ad cost, they got $20 back.
Wow.
Of course, they immediately put it in again. And then because people had seen it in order, they had shaved off the top. The next one pulled about half that, but it was still 10 to 1. Now, most advertisers consider it a huge success if they can get like 1.3 to 1. They can get a buck and a quarter back for every buck they spend. So when we're doing this outrageous kind of advertising, we're really hitting for home runs. Now, the reason it was a 3-page ad was because it started out as a direct mail letter. And, of course, it was the magazine ads are equal about 3 pages of manuscript copy that would go out in a letter. So it was like a 9 or 12-page letter, which I edited down a little bit.
Right.
And it became three. And the people my clients had done this before in a couple of other markets, and they swallowed hard, because we're talking about a six-figure ad buy there.
Oh, wow.
And so they swallowed rather hard, but they knew that they stood a good chance of doing it, because it had just been proven over and over again to them. And, of course, the mail worked very, very well. So they thought, why mail slowly to the golf market? Just put it in this magazine the golfers read and go for it that way.
And how would this translate on the web?
Well, the web, you're not paying for ad space. So the idea that you would inhibit the amount of copy that you write to cover all the sales points you need to cover is insane. And I'm not sure. Are you using single scroll pages most of the time?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, I fought. I can't really claim to be the first guy, but I'll tell you what. I was the most vocal guy about that early on. And I wrote one of the first ads for the web back in 93, and I fought really hard just to make it a single scroll. And these guys, everybody wanted links, and they wanted all this stuff going, because it was whiz-bang stuff back then.
Yeah, because they wanted everybody to go click next, click next, click next, and you said no, no.
I said no, no. Every time you have a link on your web page, you have invited the gods of technology to screw with your sales process, because something can happen. They'll go off in the ether or whatever. If they have to wait even a second, why would you want to make them wait even a second? Imagine a guy reading a letter and he's starting to get excited. He's not quite excited enough to buy yet, but he's starting to get excited. Now imagine you walk up and you pull one of the pages back and you go, okay, wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, okay, now continue reading. No, that makes no sense at all. So when people are reading a great sales letter, they're not in a rational state. They are in a lather. People don't carefully read a great sales pitch. They rip through it. They roar through it. They are jumping around, skipping around. Sometimes they'll go back to the PS, or they'll look at the signature and see who wrote this, or they'll look at the order form and they buy. I have sent out direct mail letters missing the middle four pages of a 12-page letter. We did this by accident, and it didn't hurt response at all, because I had hooked them by the first couple of pages, and then most people were just roaring back to the order form, you know, and buying it, reading the last page, and they didn't even realize four middle pages were missing.
Well, isn't it interesting how, you know, People think so hard about, well, you know, let's come up with this clever thing because people are going to analyze this, and you're saying, no, 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 no. We're going to tell them a story. We're going to find exactly where their itch is, and we're going to scratch it, and we're going to get them up into a lather, and then we're going to say, okay, buy something.
Perry, the best kind of writing is just like you and me sitting down, having a beer, and talking about something that really, really gets your jack up. You should be writing to one person at a time. Even if your letter or your web page is going out to millions of people a day, you're writing to one person. It's just you and one person reading, and it's just you talking about something. Now, you're doing all the talking because you're doing the writing. This is not interactive, but in a way it is. You are inside their head, so you want to predict what questions they're coming up with. You want to predict when they're going to say, I really don't want that, it's too expensive, but those objections like that. You want to predict and counter those things. So you really want to think about how the face-to-face thing is going to work out. It's just you're talking, but you're talking about something that you're both really passionate about. I try to convince people of the bar scene. You're sitting in a bar having a ginger ale or whatever, and some guy comes up and sits down next to you and complains to the bartender. He says, God, I got a business, and I just can't. You know, I need widgets, and all the widgets are sold out around town, you know, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And you say, you know what? I happen to know a way to get widgets from Japan for half the cost of American widgets, you know, or whatever. And then he would turn to you and he would say, really? Now, right there, you've got your foot in the door, and you've got a few seconds to start establishing your credibility, making your case, holding his interest. And that's what it's like in a good direct response ad.
So in my sales letter, I am imagining that I am talking to this other person.
Exactly.
And I'm just going, okay, so then he asks me, but wait a minute, Japan is 8,000 miles away. And you say, yeah, I know Japan is 8,000 miles away. That's why,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
That's exactly right. And that's a good way to put it. You know, you can just say, and that's why you should buy from Japan. Isn't Japan a long way away? And, you know, wouldn't that, like, hurt, delivery time? Not at all, because with DHL and blah, 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 we've got all this stuff going on.
So. Right, right.
I do want to put one caveat in there. When I talk about you, just two guys sitting down talking about this, it's not a calm, rational discussion. It's more like you're both hopping up and down. You want these guys so... You want your prospect to be so invigorated by what you write, by what you're telling him, that he can't sit still. He can't go to sleep tonight if he doesn't order. And if he does order, he's going to lay awake thinking, you know, wow, this is great. I'm so glad I made that call and ordered the stuff.
Do you want to talk about some of these examples you got here on the web?
Pop over to the, if you guys will pop over to the first example, testosterone.
Yeah, perrymarshall.com/johnletters.
Now, I'm sure you've already talked about the National Enquirer as being a good source of supplies and stuff.
Right? I've talked about like Cosmopolitan and some of these kind of magazines sure.
It's the same thing. Cosmopolitan has some of the best blurbs. All you got to do is read the front cover of the thing. And what they do is they offer outrageous, fascinating, challenging headlines that kind of that make you stop and go, "Wah." And you know, they use power words. They use words that have emotional power to them. Now, this first one, testosterone, that we're talking about, this I picked this one to put up because it's a good example of a straight and very simple transcription of a good sales pitch. Now, I didn't record or copy somebody doing a sales pitch, but I knew what the sales pitch was by talking to the client. Now, this is for bodybuilders. Now, by the way, because these products are for markets totally outside of what you're in, for people listening here, that makes no difference whatsoever. You're still. This is all about making the sale. I could use the same techniques and the same language and the same everything, the same strategy for almost any market or product under the sun. So this stuff is all cross fertilization. It doesn't matter what the product is. So when this was a letter that went out, and one of the things that I want to point out is that. Hang on, I'll bop on. I got my own copy here. It's personalized. So these are actually my manuscripts that I sent to the client. So these are not the way they ran, but these are pretty close to the way they ran.
And they paid real money for those, too.
Oh, yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Big time money. And this is what I deliver. This is an example of, you know, when I was down in L.A., I actually flirted for about a week and a half with becoming a screenwriter. And one of the first things that I got that really helped me with that was getting a hold of a screenplay that had actually sold. And I realized, oh, this is how you do it. And it was just, it broke it down for me. So it's very important to understand how writers write. So first of all, the personalization is very, very important. You are limited with the personalization you can do on the web. You can do outgoing email with personalization. Every time you can, you better do it. Because personalization in a letter or in an outgoing email will up response by 30%. Now, that's not hardcore. That's what I hear from people that I have talked into personalizing a letter they had previously put out as dear friend. Okay? Very important.
Okay.
The reason I included this letter, first of all, is the personalization. We put it in the headlines. So it would say, "Perry, I desperately need your help." So this is actually a tactic of a letter. It's called the "I need your help" kind of letter. And it's another version of I need to ask a favor from you. And this would be to somebody you have probably bought from before and you're doing back-end stuff. But anyway, down here, this is, if you look here, what I've done is I have a huge promise in a single sentence at the front. If you will grant me one simple favor, I will let you in on the biggest breakthrough in bodybuilding in your lifetime. Now, of course, you can change that. The biggest breakthrough in whatever.
Accounting software.
Yeah, right. So this is the huge promise that we talk about. Now, here's the key to writing an ad if you're not clear about how to write great ads. What's the next line that comes up? Here's what this is all about. Here's what it's all about. I use those phrases all the time, and I'll show you as we go through this. Here's what it's all about. Now, what I break down after that is the five USP points, the unique sales position that this product is. And this product is positioned as respected science. So I talk about it through a respected scientific connection. So it's respected science. It's an intense testosterone dump that lasts 30 minutes. It's a 250% boost that you can pinpoint exactly in your workout and will get you 3 years of results in the next 2 or 3 months.
Hmm.
Now that's one paragraph nailing this down, but that is the core of the product. That is essentially what this product does. That's the features, that's the USP, that's its position in there. Now, to a bodybuilder, this is big news. The next line, no one else in bodybuilding or any sport knows about this exciting new discovery yet. Now, you can only use this with a new discovery, but that's what a lot of people are doing when they're going to markets with new stuff.
Yep.
And then what I do, and this is the most important thing, Let me explain this to you in the easiest way. No, this story will blow your mind as it did mine. And then I have numbers here. And I have 11 numbers, and each of the numbers are points of the sales pitch. Things I wanted to say. Now, if I actually did this because I was running out of time to meet the deadline. It was such a brilliant way to do it that I've done it since then with other letters. This is the way, this is almost like you can do it if you had recorded somebody talking to somebody else face-to-face in a sales pitch, record it and transcribe it. You just go, number one, a group of researchers in a specialized branch of biology, blah, 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 blah. Number two, however, the only use these researchers could think of for this new discovery was to create perfume for women. Three, you see, in modern times, we no longer pick up this pheromone naturally. Too much competition, blah, blah, blah. Number four, number five, you guys can read this later. So what this does is it just, it tells the story, and I don't have to do segues. I don't need any fancy writing. I don't need to, you know, keep their interest with what we call the bucket brigade between this. You know, they know this is, if number one interested them, they're going to read number two. If number two kept them interested, they're going to read number three. And what you are is just, you're just kind of plunging them deeper and deeper into the story. And, of course, what I'm trying to do is stay in the reader's pocket. So I'm talking about things that are very, very interesting to bodybuilders. And I stray a little bit by talking about, you know, sexual pheromones and things like that, but I'm still staying in the pocket. Now, I want you to jump to what would be page three. These aren't. Right in the middle of page three, it says there in bold, here's what I want to offer you. Okay?
Yep.
Actually, above that says, now here's why I need your help.
Right.
This is the favor thing. This is where the favor comes in. So that's the explanation. We need testimonials from guys. This is what's called reason why. This is the reason why I'm writing to you and offering you such a great deal on a new product that nobody else is going to find out about.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the reason why. Now, here's what I want to offer you. Okay, if you'll give me the testimonial, I will give you this deal. So, and then right below, here's what I want to offer you, three paragraphs down. So here's the deal. So if you look at that, it says, you know, we're talking about here's what this is all about from page one. Then it goes to here's why I need your help, and it goes to here's what I want to offer you, and it goes to here's the deal. Okay?
Okay.
So and then it goes, here's what to do now, actually below that, which is explain to them very carefully how to make the call to get what they want. Oh.
Now, really, we could take this pitch.
As a boilerplate, yeah.
We can substitute any new product, any new innovation, anything that, you know, it just got patented or whatever, and we can take the same structure, change the words, and you've got a sales letter.
Right. The key thing is there is I didn't pick 11. I didn't pick 11 points. That's what it came out to be. If it had been 8, 9, 12, 20, didn't matter. What separates this from lesser writing is my ability to know what those hot 11 points needed to be. There was probably 20 or 30 points that the guy had that he could have talked about. But every, you know, I would say to 2 out of 3, I'd say, not that interesting or not that crucial to the sales pitch. So I have a little internal governor, what I call the internal salesman. And we all have that. Most of the time he's asleep, though. What part of my job as a marketing guru is to try to wake up that inner salesman. And it's the inner salesman, the guy that wakes up like when you're a refugee and you haven't eaten in 3 days and you see a guy with a loaf of bread and you got to talk him into giving you half. The inner salesman gets wide awake. So, you know, it's knowing what adds to the sales pitch and what is irrelevant to the sales pitch isn't that hard to do, but you got to be awake. You got to think about it. And what you do is you do the so what test. So every time you do a point, you know, you say, well, let's see, I want to put in point number one, that widgets made in Japan are made with oak or made with teak instead of oak. And you think, can the reader at that point say, so what? And if he can, that little tidbit doesn't go in.
Hmm.
Because as soon as the reader says, so what, you've lost him, okay? So you can't bore the reader, and you can't have him start to ask questions about, why are you telling me this? Don't go off on tangents. With a gun to your head, you don't go off on a tangent. You stick to the pitch, and once you light that little fire, that little core fire in the burning heart of your prospect, however faint it is, once that's going, don't leave it. Keep fanning it. Keep getting after it until it's a raging fire, because he won't order sure until it is a raging fire. I tell people at seminars that I imagine my prospect as this huge globulous mass sitting on a couch that wouldn't move to save itself if the house burned down. You have to get this thing to move over a little bit, to pull its wallet out, to lean over and dial the phone, which is the hardest thing you can possibly do, to call and place the order. If that's how hard it is to get somebody to pop for an order. People don't buy even what they want. They don't buy what they want. They buy what they desperately desire.
Hmm.
So you have to really light a fire under their ass. All right?
All right.
Move on to the next letter and get going. This is one of my favorites. This was in the this is an example of a writer writing about a market. I haven't got a clue. It happens to be the same client. He was doing something else. Leo Costa's a great guy. He calls me and says, hey, I got this motocross guy. He really is an expert. He's a top guy, and he agreed to do an instructional video. So I got to get hip in a very short period of time on motocross. So I call this guy. I call a few other people, and I do what I call my sales detective job. And I'm getting up to speed really, really fast on getting the motocross thing. Now you guys can go over this letter later, because I've got right down here, it says, here's the story. As you can see in the headline and in the subhead, which is the thing right under the headline, I am hitting the major sales points that I believe are there. But here's what's important on the second page, that first little, subhead. It says, but here's something all the fat cat manufacturers and advertisers don't want you to know. When you finally learn the real secrets of blending sports science and dirt-eating pro-level skills, .. you can win riding buck naked on a clapped-out six-year-old two-stroke. I have no idea what a clapped-out six-year-old two-stroke is. I talked to this BMX guy, and I said, tell me what a really lousy bike would be so that I can... In golf, I actually said, you can go out and find your grandfather's persimmon head club with the tape unraveling and go out and outdrive a guy with a Big Bertha. What you want to do is find those juxtapositions of things that would keep the reader awake and keep his level of believability almost to the point where he's going, come on. He keeps reading. And what you do is you say, you prove it. If you say something like that, you better prove it right away. And that's what I do in this letter.
So I have this image in my head of riding a six-year-old two-stroke that's clapped out and I'm naked.
Well, you know, the whole idea was that the advertisers sell helmets and pads and stuff. So you got 8-year-old kids out there racing. They don't go faster than 5 miles an hour, and if they fall over, they ain't going to get hurt. But they look like the Pillsbury Doughboys. And the whole idea was people were buying more and more expensive equipment, and you want to get back to it. Hey, it's not the equipment. That was the point I'm trying to make. It's not the equipment. It's the skills. And that's what this guy could teach you, is the skills. So.
Hmm.
So real quick, because we're almost through here, let's go to the most important letter, example number 3.
Yep.
Again, you're gonna leave these up long enough for these guys to at least...
for a couple days, that's all.
Here's a golf one. If you love golf, you're going to freak out of these dirty little secrets. This is what's called an example of a blind letter. There is almost no explanation at all of the product.
Hmm.
I talk about the 4 dirty little secrets. I don't even give them a clue what these are, but I tell them what the benefits are of knowing these dirty little secrets, that pros know them and most amateurs don't, that once you do know them, you're going to be able to, you know, you're going to win every bet you make, and your buddies are going to hate your guts and start talking about you and try to cheat while you're teeing off, you know, and cough behind you, and they're just going to hate seeing you drive up, you know, during the day, which is back to what you said about the fantasy. That's the fantasy in every golfer's head, that your buddies hate you because you win all the time.
And wouldn't you say that most of the really professional advertisers are afraid to acknowledge that that motive?
That's an excellent point. Most advertising you see out there, do not look at most advertising you see on TV here on the, well, not the radio, but the stuff you see on TV or the stuff you read in the papers or get in the mail, do not pay attention to most of that stuff. They're writing from their heels. These people are embarrassed to be advertising copywriters. They think it's beneath them and they should be Hemingway, you know, writing novels or screenplays. And they are embarrassed to ask for the sale. They think it's uncouth, or they think it's somehow beneath them, or they think you're going to go, you know, they can't take the rejection rejection of you saying, so do you want one? You know, it's pretty cheap. No, I don't want one. Oh, my God, I'm not going to be able to sleep tonight. You know, no. If you're in business, this is Operation Money Suck operating at high full tilt. You are out there making your case. You're standing up and you're saying, I don't care what everybody else says or what the competition does. I'm going to show you why we're better, and I'm going to delineate it by point so you understand this very clearly. And very important, we didn't get to this, but each of these letters has what I call a takeaway or a limited offer. That means you got to act right now. You got to put some urgency into this. If you give the reader a chance to put this letter aside and say, think about it, then you lost him. Because all good salesmen know that if the guy turns around and walks out the door, no matter how much he was nodding, no matter how much you thought you had him in your pocket, whatever, if you don't make the sale while he's there standing in front of you, he walks out, you got a 90% chance you're never going to see him again.
Yep.
He may go buy from the competition. He may decide not to buy at all. He may do whatever. So you want to make it in his best interest to buy. You want to take away all the risk. You want to have a guarantee. Hey, buy it now. Why not buy it now? You know, first of all, I'm not going to cash your check for 30 days. Second of all, you can have it for a year and a half before you decide if you want your money back. And not only that, I'll give you double your money back if you do it. And what the heck, I'll let your grandkids return it 50 years down the road if they want. We'll be in business. We've been in business for 100 years already. You know, you just take away all the reasons the guy can say why he doesn't want it, so he's left with only one option in his head. I want this. There's no reason not to get it right now. Let's get it. Okay?
Yep. Right on.
We're at 57 minutes, so we ought to let these people know what they can do.
Yeah. Let me jump in here with a little story. You know, like I said, 2 years ago, I've hung out my shingle. I've been in business for a little bit, and I'm starting to ramp things up. And you know, so I start selling some products, and I'm mailing out letters, and I'm doing all this kind of stuff, and most of my efforts were at a break even. You know, it's like, well, for every $1,000 I brought in sales, I'm spending $1,000 on postage and advertising and everything. And so John Carlton comes along, and he has this thing called an Insiders Club, which gives me access to get my work critiqued by a real professional, which is quite a different thing than just, you know, reading some copywriting book and going, oh, let's try this idea. And the first thing I sent you,
I remember
it was one of these deals where, well, you know, Perry, I think it said, Perry, you know, obviously you're a smart guy and everything, but this is this ain't gonna work. And what you told me to do was scrap the whole thing.
Which you had worked on for months.
Oh, yeah, you know, it was my baby. Scrap the whole thing, start over from scratch, and you said, okay, here's the button you got to push in your reader's head. Here's the frame of mind that you need to be in when you do this. Here's what you got to communicate, and here's where it's got to end up when it's all done. Start over. I know it's hard, and just start over and do it like this. I did that. It doubled my response, and that letter's still mailing today. And I don't let anything major out the door until John's seen it first. And there isn't anybody else in the business that I, at John's level, where you can do this. And
yeah,
so,
there's
not. I mean, of John's stature, and so, you know, I am a wholehearted, I mean, I got to buy John's stuff just like everybody else. We're not on some special little arrangement here or something. I pay for John's time just like everybody else does. I just sent him a check for a couple grand the other day. But John... Judd said, you know, I could put together something for my customers to take advantage of John's services. Now, I think if you're just kind of playing around, this is probably unnecessary. However, if you're really in business and you really have to sell and you really have a gun to your head, then John's help can really, you know, 50%, 100%, 200% improvements to what you're doing in sometimes a matter of days. So I've got John's information. It's at perrymarshall.com/Carlton, or you can go to the page you are at, go to the bottom link, and it says John Carlton's Insider Club. So why don't you just tell everybody, you got three different things here. Why don't you tell everybody what it is?
Well, actually, I'd like to let them find out on their own. This, by the way, is an example of a letter that's worked so well. I barely changed it in the 2.5 years it's been up. But this will explain to you almost everything that I offer. I do have a three-tiered package. You can get a basic course, or you can get the course plus a few other goodies. Or, like Perry said, most people that are serious about marketing get the Insiders Club, which is what we call the big kahuna, the whole enchilada. It's a lot of stuff. Plus, and it includes email critiques from me. A lot of other people said I was going to regret offering that people were going to take up all my time, and that's just not true. I've been doing this for 2 years. I just love dealing with people. And I should say something. This sounds like I'm making it up, but I'm really not. When I started out, nobody helped me. I wasn't joking when I said I met my first copywriter. I was working in the art department of a computer supply catalog in Silicon Valley in the late 90s. I didn't realize that people actually wrote all those words in the catalog. And I met my first copywriter. I said, "This is interesting. I'm very interested in this. I like to write. I'm interested in this. Can you tell me how to become a copywriter like you?" And she looked at me and she blinked. She sighed very deeply. She was from New York. She says, "No, I can't. It's too hard. You'll never do it." And that infuriated me, and so I stole her copy of John Caple's Advertising Method.
Okay.
Now, but I made a vow right then and there that when I made it, I was going to help as many people as I could. I like to live my life, you know, karmically clean. I believe that what goes around comes around. I believe that what you put in into the world is the kind of stuff that comes back. I believe in this wholeheartedly. And I've helped people on the side for years and years. Some top writers, actually. A few, if you'll see in the testimonies, a few even admit that they've made their millions with ideas and stuff from mine. And now that I'm out helping people that aren't on the inside, I'm getting a lot out of this, and I'm really, really enjoying it. I wish I'd learned that teaching was so much fun a long time ago, because it is. It's just a blast. I really enjoy it. And this is something that I think you can have, you know, you can have fun while you're becoming ridiculously wealthy, you know, using all these inside tactics that you're not going to come by on your own. I came by them after, you know, during a 20-year career because I was singularly focused, and I did this full time, and I was lucky. I went straight for the jugular of the business. I started working with Jay Abraham before I was a year out on my own. I mean,
wow.
I don't know who he was. Through Jay, I met Gary. Through Gary, I've worked with all the top mailers and all these guys that, you know, I've been back there. I know them. I know how this game works. I've sold a lot of stuff. I was lucky. I had one of the most intense, no, I had the most intense ride of the last century in advertising. I worked with all the top guys. I mean, it's not because I'm special. It's because I was positioned at the right time in the right place down in Southern California, and it just worked out that way. Of course, I kept up my end, which was working like a dog for 10 years, and then I slowed down a lot in the next 10. But I learned the game. I know this thing inside out. I am a working veteran copywriter with combat experience from the trenches of the advertising wars. I know this stuff. When I say something works, I'm not spouting theory. I'm telling you because I've either used it or I continue to use it, or I know somebody personally who uses it, and they told it to me that, you know, they gave me the reasons why it works and everything else.
Well, there is a little cadre of guerrilla marketers and entrepreneurs that are sort of growing up in the John Carlton school of copywriting. I know a whole bunch of them. I talked to one last night, Harlan, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Harlan Kilstein is like 2 years ago, he became an Insiders Club member, and he sends you, just like I do, you know, here's a URL of a web page I just put up. John, what do you think of it? And then you sort of rip it apart and then, you know, rub some Neosporin on my wounds and say, "Hey, buddy, you know, go back and try again."
Yeah, I am brutal in my because I owe it to you to be brutal. If you came to me and said, "Is this okay?" And I said, "Well, it's pretty good. I mean, you could use a little sprucing up, but basically you're a good writer." If I told that to people when it wasn't true and they went out, there's money on the line there. And when money's on the line, I am as serious as cancer. I treat my critiques the same way I treat my own stuff, and I'm brutal with my own stuff. That's the only way it works. You got to be honest in this business. That's one of the benefits. When you're honest, you start to wake up. And when you're awake, life becomes so much more brighter and more fun. Perry, didn't I kind of insist that you travel?
Well, we talked about that. We had these conversations about, you know, you really got to get out of Chicago and go somewhere and see something different, right?
In China, exactly, but that's where you went.
Yeah, send postcards from China and Mozambique.
I love those postcards. Every once in a while, I get a postcard from Perry and some other part of the world running around, and you come back and your stuff's fresher and a little hotter, and you bring back just a little more of that oomph that makes stuff work. You know, it's life. You know, one of the things you'll learn in my course is I will force you to answer the question, why are you in this in the first place? What are you doing this for?
Yep.
A lot of people think they want to get rich because they think it's going to change their life or make their lives better. And that's not a good reason for doing it. What you want to do is understand life and use this as a means to make your life better in ways that you're going to discover as you go along. This, you know, life is a precious thing. I had very close friends of mine die when I was very young, and it really hit home that this really is a very short little adventure we're on here on this planet. And making the most of it is the best thing you can do.
Right. So really, I just recommend John with as much sincerity as I can, because he's really shaped what I'm doing. So I want you to, you know, click on the link. This is John Carlton's Insiders Club. Read all about it. So two things. First of all, for the first 10 people who take either John's Insider Club or his Damn Good Deal, the top two packages, first 10, all the orders are time-stamped on the server, you'll get $100 credit towards any of my stuff that you want. And in some cases, that could mean you're getting something free because it's 99 bucks or whatever. So that's to the first 10. This is going to be up for 24 hours, for the duration of July 21, and then it's going to go down. And this is a discounted rate of what John normally offers. So when it goes away, it's gone.
Yeah.
So that's the deal. Read at your leisure. Learn what John is offering. But, you know, if you want it, take advantage of it, because it John just has my highest recommendation. It's been enormous. I mean, it always takes a whole bunch of things, but I could probably credit 20-25% of my net profit to the improvements that John's sort of forced me to make in my work. And that's a big deal when you start, you know, you get a sales letter and you make it 10% better. That's all profit.
Yes.
So
that's a good point,
Perry. So that's the deal, John. And and I told everybody that I would tell you how to get an MP3 of this call, because if you're smart to listen again, you'll go through the examples and review this, because these letters he's got are fantastic. So all you need to do is send an email to info@perrymarshall.com with a testimonial about the call. Just say, you know, I liked it a little, I liked it a lot, or what you got out of it. All you got to do is send in a testimonial. You get the MP3. Nobody else will get those MP3s until October. So just send an email to info@perrymarshall.com. And like I said, first 10 get 100 bucks credit. I think you guys will like interacting with John. He's a real professional. So.
A little wacky, but a pro.
Oh, eccentric for sure, but that's okay. You know, all of us are. So that's all I got.
Okay, Perry, it was great. I really enjoyed it. The hour went by too fast, so let's do this again soon.
Right on.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, John.
Bye-bye.
Bye.